Honestly, I mean, I'm on social media the whole week. I'm into politics the whole week. I go to protests. I get beat up. I go to jail. But one thing that I know is no matter what's going on in the world, on Shabbat, I can rest.
All right, welcome everyone. I'm Na'ama Segal Karis, and this is How Do You Jew, the podcast that highlights the diversity of the Jewish experience so that we can increase Achdut Israel, love of Israel, each for his fellow, and we can finally get Mashiach, we can finally get Geula. I have with me today an incredible Jew. He's what I would consider to be quite courageous. He is devoted to Am Yisrael. He is devoted to being an active, loud, proud Jew. And I am thrilled to have him here, contrary to his handle. I have Alex Popovker here with me. I'm sorry, Rabbi Alex Popovker. He recently got smicha as well. So I want to thank him for coming on. Welcome, Rabbi Alex.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate you. And yeah, I am loud, annoying. I cause a lot of trouble. I'm a troublemaker.
Good trouble.
So, well, it is and it isn't, because I figured at some point in my life that I'm going to be in trouble one way or another. So,
Well, you're being proactive at least.
well, I'm saying I'm trying to channel my trouble.
All right, you know what? That's all right. Each of us does Judaism in our own way, and I love that.
I bring
So
trouble wherever I go, so I'm going to go to our enemies, and then,
there you go. There you go. And that's one of the reasons that I picked Alex to come on is he's not afraid to have the hard conversations. He's not afraid to call things out for what they are. And life is getting quite challenging for us, both in America and outside the US and Chutz La'aretz. And so I really wanted to highlight the work that he's doing, the good trouble he's getting himself into. But before we put that cart before the horse, Alex, if you wouldn't mind, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what do you do, and how your Jewish identity shapes your life. What's your origin story?
My origin story,
Nope, can't hear you.
I'm sorry, that was work related. I'm
Oh, sure,
sorry.
no
I just had
problem.
to pick that up.
Sure.
Sorry. I was born in Ukraine in Soviet Union back in 1976, a pretty long time ago for normal people. I moved to the United States in 1989. It was kind of interesting because when we left Soviet Union, it was still Soviet Union. By the time we arrived to America, there was a McDonald's in Moscow.
Wow. I
And
remember the
where
day that McDonald's opened.
Right. Well, we got off the airplane in New York, and the people showed me the newspaper. I don't know if it was New York Times, but it said McDonald's opens in New York. And I was like, I mean, in Moscow. And I was like, what the hell is McDonald's?
That's
What the?
crazy. That was
Like,
that
I
had
had
to be culture shock on top of culture shock.
I was like, okay, what? I mean, there was a lot of, I didn't understand anything. So that was just one of many things,
I'm sure.
Then the people that met us were interesting too, because we are coming out of the plane, walking through the airport like all other Russian immigrants that spent, we stayed in Italy for half a year waiting for the appointment with the embassy. The immigration wasn't a direct flight back then during Soviet Union. It had to be like, sometimes it took years. Some people never got permission to arrive to America. So it took us a half a year from the time we left Soviet Union till we got to US. As we are walking out, we see through the glass some like four laden people with big pearls on them, holding signs with our names on it. And we were like,
Oh,
what?
wow.
We're like, what's going on? And turns out that this super wealthy New Jersey community, eenie meenie moe, picked our family to adopt as in their town. So we come outside, and there's these two like huge buses to take us.
Wow. Were
And
your names written in English or Russian?
Pretty sure it was English. Pretty sure.
Okay.
It, well, probably it said things like "Welcome, Poppers." Or may have said it in Russian too, because
Oh.
they did hire a translator. We had a wonderful translator for a while at the beginning.
Wow.
It was very, very, I would say, very different experience than most other Jews got, because we get on these buses and they take us to this house in suburbs of New Jersey and say, here, you could stay here for a while. And it's like a huge house with food and everything.
Right. Totally different planet, right?
We are like, what the hell is going on? And then in the morning, that was the biggest culture shock for me coming to America. I was very excited to go outside. I wake up in the morning, I run outside, I'm walking in the street, and it's completely empty. There's no people or anything. And the only thing I saw was, I heard the sound of a garage door opening, which again, I've never seen. I thought America was skyscrapers. I was like,
Right.
where are the skyscrapers?
What is a suburb?
What the hell? Where am I? Where are the people? And then the weirdest thing, a garage door opens, a car comes out, and that's like the only, that's it. I mean, I've lived in cities my whole life, like in the center of cities.
Right.
Everywhere I lived, the streets were always full of people, So
Right.
for me, this was something very different. This New Jersey suburban life, I should have committed harakiri right there. If I knew what that meant, then I don't know if I would have, I probably would not have survived it. It's a good thing I didn't know what, I thought it looked better than it really is. Suburbs are hell because there's no
Sometimes
life
ignorance is
in this stuff.
bliss.
Right. So ignorance allowed me to get to this day. Yes.
So,
God
what do you
bless the
do?
ignorance.
What do you do now? What's been the evolution for you now?
Well, so yes, yeah, so I came to America. I was like the first immigrant in that town. Picked up English pretty fast. Then it was funny because the Russian mafia, Soviet Union fell apart. So all the Russian people who had the, muscle working for them, basically, racket, all that stuff, they took over big companies and became the Russian mafia, the big millionaires. So they all wanted to come to America and get houses. And where do they all want to go? The city I'm living in. And who is the only
Of course they do.
person there that speaks English to Russian? Me. So I did have a safe for a while where I had so much money that I never counted it. Actually, you pay me in less cash, And I did everything for them, all of their accounting, because I knew I was studying accounting at the time also. So I did their business, I ran their businesses, I prepared their licenses, I took care of them. So yes, I was like the consiglio of the Russian mafia for a while.
Oh my
That
gosh.
was nice. I also translated their business dealings. And sometimes the boss would scream at me because he would literally like threaten to kill someone I'm talking to, and I couldn't say that, I was just so I was like, tell him what I said.
That had to be awkward.
That was a little awkward because I was trying to be nice. I don't want to scare people.
Translate.
One time we were driving to one of the gas stations to purchase, and with the bodyguard, Sasha, my friend, and there's this huge hill. You go up and then you go down, and then there's a red light right there. And right at that intersection is the police station. So he's going too fast as usual. And he can't stop. We're going downhill. We're flying into this car. We're driving a four-wheel in the back Dodge Ram truck. They just came out. They looked huge, back then. And we smashed this car in a way that the back of it collapses completely. And it just flies, I don't know, 50 feet forward, but straight, And the guy miraculously is okay.
Wow.
So Sasha says, Sasha gives me a stack of money and says, go deal with it. So I go to the guy and I'm looking at the police station and there's like five cops walking towards us. They saw the accident. And I walk to the guy and I give him $2,000 cash. And I said, will this take care of it? He's like, yeah, this is fine. And he tells the cops to go back.
Oh my God. That sounds like you made it up. I'm serious. That's
No, it was
crazy.
like it wasn't a new car. It was like an Oldsmobile or whatever, one of those older cars. So the guy got $2,000 cash. It's probably worth more than that car. Anyway, so but it was funny that it was right in front of the police, and the damage to the truck, to our truck, was literally nothing. We got to the gas station and we had to retighten the big metal, what is that called? The bumper. That's it. Like not even a scratch.
Wow. Well, yeah, no, the original Dodge Ram was like a beast.
Right. So that was it. That was the Dodge Ram. Anyway, so then that was high school. Then I went to college.
Wait, you did all that in high school? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Then I went to college and got into other experimental things, and that led me to my religious experiences and going to Israel within a year. After several arrests and things like that, and then I got arrested a few times for illegal things, but then I went to back to New Jersey, worked for the stock exchange a little bit for some Italians that were, or actually sold some stock, working for them, and they were really cool guys. They kind of liked me. Italians and Jews go together anyway. So
Really? Okay.
yeah, very much. Yeah, we're like peas in a pod.
Okay.
So I worked for the Italians, made a little money, and then I went on the kibbutz program to Israel. And in the kibbutz, I was making trouble, obviously. And then one time I was speaking to the director, and he tells me like about because I talked to him about religion and all that stuff, and he's completely secular. Right? And he tells me like, sometimes I know who's gonna call, like. Call and then phone. You see all this prophecy stuff? It happens. It just happens. It's not something religious. I'm like, okay, whatever. And then he says to me, and there's those crazy Jews in Mesh Harim that study, and he was like making fun of them. And I'm like, what, man? What? Where am I going? Where do I need to go? So I ended up going, of course, to Jerusalem many times and meeting religious Jews, and then I studied at a few yeshivas, Old City Jerusalem. Then I found Chabad by because I went to, I met a friend and he's like, your stuff you're talking about, you should read Tanya. Okay, we went to buy Tanya. I love Tanya. So then when I came to visit my parents, miraculously it was the Shliach convention of that year.
Oh,
And the
wow.
shliach, yeah, and the shliach and the bocher that I met, that became my longtime friend Alex Kaller. He's a big shliach now. Anyway, so he studied Tanya with me also. He takes me to Crown Heights 770. I have no idea what that is. I have no idea what shliach convention is or anything. And we're going to Crown Heights. Okay, we go to the Ohel. I was like, wow, okay, interesting. Then we go to Crown Heights, and they literally push me into the Rebbe's office, which is stuffed with people, and I see a Sefer Torah. I'm not sure which one that is, but I think it's the last one, the little one that was written. It was supposed to be a Sefer Torah to greet Mashiach. And they literally, I watch it being written like on the Rebbe's desk. And then,
Was the
and
Rebbe
it's of
still
course,
alive at that time?
no. This is 1997. 1997, And then I met Beryl Lazar, and he says to me, "Don't worry, I'll make a few calls for you." So while I was in Litvish yeshivas before that, coming back to Israel, I was already signed up in a Chabad yeshiva. I went straight to Chabad after that, and yeah, never looked back. So I love Chabad. It's definitely the Torah of our time. It's you could also say Torah Chadasha, the new Torah that maybe for people that might not have appreciation of it, it's kind of like the Havdil, not to compare, but it's like the Buddhism of Judaism.
The Buddhism of Judaism.
Yeah, that's I
I
think
love
that's,
that. So
yeah.
one of the things that I like to remind people of, and my guests, is that part of the reason, well, the main reason of this podcast is to bring Geula. But my hope is that my audience, all three of them, whoever they may be in the world, if they haven't come back to Judaism yet, that's okay. And that, I want to make sure that I make it as accessible as possible. So for those of you who have not come back to Judaism yet, when Alex is referencing things like Litvish versus Chabad, we're literally talking about apples and oranges in terms of philosophy of how you Jew. And Litvish, and I'm a Balshuva, so I'm making this up. Alex, correct me. Litvish tends to have this connotation of sort of narrowness and rigidity, and this is just how we do things, and we're not going to get all mystical and spiritual about it. We're just going to follow the rules. And Chabad is much more mystical, spiritual, esoteric. Is that right?
If I may share my opinion, which is a little bit different.
Please.
You said, what was that? You said narrow and what else?
And
Narrow
narrow and sticking to the rules
and
and not being
rigid.
so mis yeah, and not so
Okay,
mystical.
so if you allow me, I disagree.
Okay.
I think Chabad is actually much more rigid than Litvish.
Okay.
Practically speaking, not all Litvish keep Chalav Israel and Pat Israel and don't grow their beards. So in fact, practically speaking, a Chabad is much more strict and rigid. We don't necessarily eat their shechita or the meat that they slaughter, because we require also that the person be spiritually prepared to do this kind of work, which is also what Shulchan Aruch requires. So I would say Chabad is more rigid, but what I think you mean is that Chabad is much more open and tolerant of others. So that's
Okay.
true.
Okay.
But you know what I mean? So it's not that we are lenient about laws, or we study
No,
less
no.
legalistic things. But Litvish, they're like more, we study the Talmud and we study the law, and that's kind of like they make that their kind of main thing. But and they, like you said, don't really study mysticism so much. Chabad studies not only revealed aspects of the Torah, but also the hidden, the things that are based on Kabbalah. But not direct Kabbalah. Direct Kabbalah is kind of like medicine that needs to be prescribed by a doctor.
That's a great analogy.
But Hasidut, on the other hand, is Kabbalah that's already been
It's been
kind
processed
of,
for you.
it's been processed for you, for a layman. For in
Yeah.
fact, not only the Hasidus explains that the teachings of Chabad Hasidut, they transcend all barriers, even the barrier of Jewish and not Jewish. Because most Torah, if a non-Jew studies regular non-Jew in the street, starts studying Torah or Talmud, because of the way things are in the world, he might, and chances are he will, and that's why we don't teach non-Jews, see it in a negative light and be like, "Oh, look, now I have another thing to say bad about the Jews. Oh, I found another crazy thing in the Talmud. Let me make fun of that." So that's unfortunately what happens very often. And that's why, according to Judaism, we're not allowed to teach non-Jews Torah because of anti-Semitism, because anti-Semitism is so strong that usually they will pervert it. However, Hasidut does not have that limitation, because Hasidut deals with the internal workings of men and women, the way we think inside ourselves, the way that we process reality and our lives, and deal with the every day our lives, and what is belief in God, and what is the creation, and what is my place in it, and why do I have an evil inclination, and all these things. So those things are personal, individual, and universal, and therefore you can't really mess with it. What are you gonna, there's nothing you can do to it.
No,
So
you're
it's
definitely right. So that's one of those distinctions I wanted to make sure that everyone knows, because, and you may realize this as you're listening to this, dear listener, Judaism is like an onion, and like the more you peel back, the more you get, and the more layers you pull off, the more layers you find. And so, a lot of this is not surface level. You don't realize, like, you see a Jew in a black hat, you don't know, you just assume they're a Jew. There are many, many, many different variances. And I think that that was part of the reference there. And I was curious for you, Alex, like in terms of like today, what do you do for a living for day to day, and how does your Jewish identity shape that?
but when I was little, I broke everything. So,
Like with a baseball
like,
bat? Like, what do you
no,
mean?
I would like climb on top of the furniture and then jump onto some other furniture.
Ah,
Things
okay.
would break. Or I would take things apart, like, grandpa has a clock, let's take it apart, find the screwdriver. So, did I repair those things? No, I did not. No, I didn't. But after I broke enough things and saw how they work inside, I figured in theory I could fix it. So that's what I do. I fix things. I'm a repair man.
Okay,
And
well, at least you fixed the things that are broken now.
it's a tikkun olam. I used to destroy, now I'm repairing.
Love it. And
So,
how does your Jewish identity influence that?
Well, that's an interesting question. Well, one way that it influences it is that I'm pretty flexible. I don't have to work on Shabbos or holidays. I can figure out a way that you don't have to take your hot water urn to the mikveh, because there's a mechanical way you can mess with it that makes it no longer requiring a mikveh.
So you
So,
figure out really creative ways to get things done.
yeah, that may be true. Yeah, so actually, that's a good point. Also, when you learn Talmud, it's a lot of it is very technical. A lot of it is very like tool hand work oriented, so I like doing that kind of stuff. I think it also puts my mind a little bit at peace, because busy hands, what do they say about busy hands?
Idle hands are the devil's playground is the one I'm thinking of, and that's a not
Yeah,
a Jewish statement. But
but it
yes, now
is
busy hands
true.
are good. Busy
Yeah,
hands are
busy
good.
hands is good. So I like that, and I like that I don't have to do the same thing every day, because that's not good.
I love that. Actually, it's interesting. I
How
when I first started learning little bits of Daf Yomi and stuff like that, learning a page of the Talmud every day, I didn't realize how much of Talmud is deconstructing day-to-day mechanical, agricultural, blue-collar
right.
things that we live with every single day. Milking a cow, chopping wood, all of these things that kind of are the body and framework of our life. Talmud talks about it, and it to me it's brilliant. I didn't even realize that. It's so interesting.
Yeah, you're bringing up a good point. Like it says in the Talmud, for example, for certain questions, you don't ask a rabbi. You ask the woman washing the clothes in the city. What? That doesn't make sense. You should ask the rabbi, right? No, they said, because in this particular thing, the women that wash the garments are the experts in that thing. That's who you
That's
should
right.
ask.
You go to the expert. That's so
Exactly. So,
interesting.
also Judaism, speaking of that, treats medicine very importantly.
Yes.
So, for example, if there's a Jewish law involved and there's any medical question, you don't listen to the rabbi, like circumcision, for example. Of course, it's a maybe the most important mitzvah for Jewish people. It's the covenant that God made with Abraham, how that's passed on, to all our children. It's very important on the same, and it has to be done on the eighth day. But if a doctor has any, even if a rabbi has any questions whatsoever, it's going to get postponed.
Yeah.
But if the doc, but in the end, you listen to what the doctor says,
Yeah.
and that's something interesting in Judaism, that we follow the doctor's opinion on any matters related to health. We don't listen to the
Absolutely.
rabbi, we listen to the doctor.
Well, because our religion is founded in common sense and logic. Like that's what
I
we do.
would say even more than that, Vilna Gaon, the greatest sage of the Litvish Jews, he said that the first commandment to know God includes learning science, because God made the world.
That's right.
So if you're learning science, you're actually learning the deeds of God Almighty.
Absolutely. That's how we
And
can perceive his world and then relate to him.
it enriches, if you learn science properly, it enriches your religious views, of course, as well.
Yeah, I think that that's one of those things people forget. And I love that you brought that up. Speaking of Torah and connecting to Hashem, I have a double question. What is something you wrestle with? We are Am Yisrael, the ones who wrestle with Hashem. What is something in Torah and Judaism that you wrestle with? And what is something that you love about Torah and Judaism?
I wrestle with consistency. Because Judaism, every day there's three prayers there, at the same time. You have to pray in the synagogue, you have to put tefillin, you have to learn Torah. So I am, I think, I don't know what the exact diagnosis. They talk about more spectrum charts now, but I have trouble, I have trouble doing the same things every day. Consistently. So while it actually, so Judaism provides me some grounding, because even if it may not be natural for me to get organized and do things in a regular way, I love Judaism and I love what I learn about it, so it keeps bringing me back, So that's, as you put it, it is a struggle, and all struggles that we have in life, they don't necessarily get resolved, and we remain Israel, we remain, we struggle. The difference is, the difference between Israel and people that don't struggle is that we struggle.
That's right.
It's not necessarily winning. It's that we fight, and we know. There's a quick story I'll tell you, that King
I love stories.
Tsar Alexander of Russian Empire, back in the days, he would sometimes get dressed up as one of the soldiers and go to the Kazarm to see what the soldiers are doing. So one day he dresses up as a regular soldier and he goes, and guess who he finds at the base, army base? Nobody. Why? Okay, I'll give you a clue. It's Russia. They're Russian. So where are they?
At the bar.
Yeah, they're all drinking in the town. So he goes to the town, the nearest town.
No shade to any Russian people listening. I'm guessing.
So he was walking to the town, and he's looking, and along the road it's full of the soldiers, because they didn't make it back. They got were
Oh,
so
you
drunk.
mean like they're passed out drunk on the
They
road?
all passed out on the road, yeah. So then he goes back to the base, and the next lineup, he goes along, he comes out now as the Tsar, and he points to some people and he says, "These people need to get whipped." And
Oh
they
boy.
start whipping these people, and then they ask, like, everybody got drunk, nobody came to the base on time, whatever, but why did only some people get whipped? Why those specific people? So he said that the rest of the people fell in the right direction.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So it's very important which direction you're falling.
I think that's the most Russian joke I've ever heard in my life. Love it. So now, what is something that you love about Torrent Judaism?
Awareness, like I think to know is the most powerful thing, and knowledge is power. It's also the most fundamental state of existence that is impervious to time and space. So, and that's what Torah does. It puts us in touch with eternal, and maybe some of it rubs off on us, and through that we live forever. And when you learn Torah, you can kind of feel it.
What does it feel like to you? Do you feel it physically or just mentally?
Both. Because that level of truth transcends everything. There's no spiritual or physical. God is not spiritual. God is not physical. Those things are constructs of our perception of reality. You know, according to quantum physics, if there's no observer, the light is just a wave. It's not a particle. So we see from that how human being in a certain way shapes our reality. To God, there's no concealment. So physical reality is just more information, more data. But we are part of that data. So to us, it seems like all these physical things, but they don't really exist. So learning about these things and realizing them and finding my place in it, heightens awareness. And I like power, and that makes me feel powerful.
That's amazing. So now the theme of this podcast is highlighting how you do Judaism in your own unique way. So I'm going to ask the question, how do you bring your own unique flavor of Judaism into the world and in your everyday life? Rabbi Alex, how do you do?
So, there's that famous phrase, keep an open mind, but don't let the brains fall out.
Yes, I love that saying.
So, yeah, I just came to my mind. What I really wanted to say is it's an American farmer's idiom that I love, and it's guiding me through life. It says, done, finished is better than perfect. So,
Love that.
you can't aspire to there's no completion to learning Torah or working on yourself, but getting things done, just little things, mitzvahs, do a mitzvah here, do a mitzvah there, learn when you can, do what you can. Somebody will tell me, you know what, that's the path of least resistance. Okay. Okay, you know what I mean? Listen, do the hard resistance. I'm not telling you to do that. But for me, this is my way. You ask me my way, this is my
I love that. It's true. And there's something to be said about, ticking off a small box like, yes, I davened shacharit today. It may not have been perfect. I may have said a word wrong, but I did my best and I got it done. There's something really, really good about that. It feels really
It's a
good to listen to that.
powerful thing. It's a powerful thing to get things done, even if they're, not all there, but you did it, you got it done. Very important. And my uncle a long time ago told me something. Patterns are very important too. So when you do something good, something that heightens your awareness or reminds you about something, and that's what mitzvot are. The commandments are reminders. Connections in the physical, just like you could have a higher awareness from something that you learn about spiritual, you can have a higher awareness from something you do physical. And like I said, because God is beyond spiritual and physical, they're both necessary methods of connecting to different aspects of God's manifestation. So doing a mitzvah, just like learning Torah and praying, should be regular. Mitzvahs should also be regular, and when they become part of your life, you're kind of bringing God to heaven down to earth. That's what it's all about.
So when you go through your day, through your life in the world, done is better than perfect. How does that bring your personal Judaism out?
Because you know, I think that there are a lot of people who kind of have this worldview where, oh, you're not gonna do everything the way I do it or dress up. That just take your kippah off, you know. Don't make us look bad, kind of thing.
Yeah, throw the baby out with the bathwater.
I'm not exactly. So I'm fine with the bathwater. And I'll tell you another little story, a joke. I don't think it's Russian, but so it goes like this.
It's all right.
Yeah. So this guy, he goes to heaven, and before choosing which heaven, to, like, you know, going to heaven, they give him a choice. You know, you get the choice. It's like you can go to any heaven you want. Christian heaven, Muslim heaven, Jewish heaven.
Nice.
So he's like, okay, you know, let me see, like, the Christian heaven. So, the Jewish heaven first. So he looks at Jewish heaven, and it's a mess. You know, there's, like, houses built upon houses against code, clearly.
Clearly.
You know? There's dirty children everywhere running around picking their nose, you know, and you know, just like full of people, everybody's pushing and shoving. It's crazy. So like, okay, let me see the Christian heaven. Okay, they show him the Christian heaven, and everything's really perfect. Perfect little houses, perfect little fences, perfect little bushes, perfect little flowers. Perfect little street, nobody there.
So you're describing Stepford.
The punchline is there's nobody there.
Oh, that's right. There's nobody there because nobody made it. Ah, that's funny. I like it.
So, you know, so that's kind of like the Jewish habit is like the word.
I love that. And for those of you who are listening, you may not be at my YouTube watching the video version of this interview, but one of the things that I noticed when I first moved to my community and I saw Alex and his family walking down the street is that he and his five sons, first of all, it looks like copy paste when they walk down the street. Like they literally look like little mini Alexes down to the hair and the beard and the kippot. Like they literally look like copy paste, but also he carries himself and everyone in the family, they carry themselves with this very strong, independent, outward energy. They look a little bit different. They don't wear the standard penguin uniform as some people might define for, you know, ultra-Orthodox Jews, none of that. He looks much more, they carry themselves much more as everyday looking folks, very relaxed. And let's be real. Some people might look at that and go, oh, you must not be very religious. You must not fit our mold. You must not be XYZ just because of outward appearances. And when I saw Alex and his family, I was like, oh, they must be really intensely spiritual people. Like they really must have spiritual power because they have the cojones to be who they are and to not wear the uniform and to just be themselves when they walk down the street. Do you feel like that is true to you guys, that you guys kind of walk to your own flag?
Yeah, I feel that's true. We're kind of like settler style Israeli type people. And I think that's because partially we are Balei Tshuva. So, you know, when you're born in a religious family, in a religious community, you're gonna get the penguin uniform.
That's just, not intended, you know, to insult anyone. That's literally what we say about each other. Like
I don't mean to demean anyone, but probably gonna go to hell for that. All right.
Oh, probably.
you know what Mark Twain said about that?
No, tell me.
He said, heaven for the climate, hell for the company.
Hell for the climate. I'm sorry. Heaven no. for the climate, hell for the company. That is funny. That's very Mark Twain. That is very Mark Twain.
Yes.
Very much. So you really do identify Judaism down to the core nugget of who you are, and you just walk it and talk it in everything you do.
I try my best. I do my thing. I don't. I try not to label and have what's the word? Expectations. Work in progress. And
Yep, there you go.
I feel like people sometimes they're so concerned and worried about some intricate parts in their life and. Or their private life, which is very important, of course, and all that. But I think there's something to say for caring about real evil things going on in the world. And that evil usually starts with an evil ideology, propaganda, false information being spread. And it's not just well, false information is usually never good, unless it's really preventing hurt from someone. But even then, it's questionable. But in a lot of cases, it causes genocides and massacres and so much suffering that people have to not worry so much about the details of their spiritual health. And find something to do about innocent people suffering because of evil people. So that's, and that's kind of also Judaism, because according to Judaism, the most important commandment is saving a life. Muslims, they say, it says in the Quran actually, that one who saves one life, it's as if they have saved an entire universe. And then it ends interestingly in that verse. It says, "This is the word of Allah." Well, I agree with everything that in that part of the Quran. It's interesting though that the actual quote is from the Talmud. So some Muslims accept
Which
the
is a
Talmud.
little older.
I am, but no, I'm just saying Muslims consider the Talmud the word of Allah, just like us.
That's
So
right.
it's kind of it's a nice.
You know, it's interesting. There was a
I like
line
to
that I
remind
heard
them.
in college. It was originally talking about the shift from Catholicism to the Reformation and the Renaissance, but the line essentially says, most people are concerned with their own souls. And how, other people's bellies, meaning like the salvation of their own soul, and I'm sorry, most more people, how did it go? Most people are concerned for their own bellies and saving other people's souls, and they really should be concerned with feeding other people's bellies and saving their own souls. And it
That makes
sounds
a lot of
very
sense.
much like this philosophy that you carry with you, and I think that that's it. Does that inform your parenting too?
No, my wife takes care of everything else in my life. No
No pressure.
pressure, but I am the
And she
wild
handles
one.
it beautifully, by the way. Like,
Yes,
I would not
she
want to
does.
cross her ever.
And
She's got it together.
I
So, just two more little questions. And well, they're not little, but you can decide how long you want to answer. If you could pick just one Jewish tradition or Jewish value or Jewish experience that holds deep meaning for you, what would it be and why?
Shabbat would probably be number one because it's weekly. Like I said, patterns that you can bring into your life that are repetitive are the most powerful things to influence your daily behavior, your outlook on reality. And honestly, I mean, I'm on social media the whole week. I'm into politics the whole week. I go to protests. I get beat up. I go to jail. But one thing that I know is no matter what's going on in the world, on Shabbat, I can rest and I can pray and I can learn. I mean, it's if anybody wants to know the secret of Jewish people's survival, I think it's that.
That's amazing. And if you could share just one insight or piece of wisdom from Judaism with the audience, with the wider world, what would it be?
Just the first thing that comes to mind is Rambam, the greatest sage of Judaism. He lived in Spain. He lived in Africa. He was a vizier to Muslims and everything. He was buried in Tveria in Israel about 1,000 years ago, and on his grave it says, "Mi Moshe ad Moshe, lo aya kamoshe," like from Moses to Moses. There was nobody like Moses. That's how great he was.
Right.
And in one of his books, Moreh Nevuchim starts doesn't start. It has a this prolo this note, and it says, "Accept the truth, no matter where it comes from." So even though this is kind of like weird, because this is not Jewish, this teaching. But
right.
in fact, it is, because Judaism teaches you to learn from everything and from everyone. And the truth is not something you find somewhere. Truth is all around us that you're not seeing.
Well, Talmud says, who is wise? One who learns from everyone.
Right. That's another way to put it. Correct. So I think that's the greatest wisdom. And each person is unique. Each person has their own Torah, their own perception of reality, their own relationship with God. And that means that each person has a unique Torah that only they can reveal, a unique truth that only they can find. So it's very important to appreciate the truth of others, and maybe you'll develop more respect for the truth you find within yourself also. Okay, I gotta go, but it was a pleasure. Thank you
so
much.
It was wonderful connecting. Thank you so much, Alex.
All right,
have a
God
great
bless.
Day.
You too. Bye bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This has been How Do You Jew, the podcast that highlights the diversity of the Jewish experience. We need Geula already. I am sick of waiting for Mashiach, so let's make it happen. Enjoy the people around you. Respect and love your fellow. It doesn't matter if they Jew differently than you. Let's get Geula. Have a great day. I'll see you soon.